Oh, I heard Joanne.
Hey, Ed.
Oh, how is life up north?
Life up north is good. I was just in your territory for 2 days.
Oh. All right, let's
working.
See. Working. We're all working.
We met with Tina for to review our data and so on. So just got home, and it's not bad. Not raining. Not too cold.
All right. Hey, is Jennifer on? Ken Jones? Kathy Sulik? Scott? Elizabeth? Sarah's on? Tina? Tatiana? Peter? First? Well, it seems like a lot of people aren't on yet, so.
Hannigan's here.
Hey, Dr. Hannigan.
Dr. Hey, Riley.
Yeah, Ken Wilburn is here.
I'm sorry, who was that?
It's Michael, Ed. I'll be on for about 20 minutes until they close the doors.
Hi, Michael. Who else?
Ken.
I got Johan. I got Ken Warren. Dale and Bill.
Helen is here. I'm probably sitting for Bill.
Okay.
Ken Jones.
Dr. Jones. Oh.
This is Jennifer.
Hey, Jennifer. Sounds far away.
Hi, I'm Tracy.
Kathy and Scott are here.
There. Elizabeth, you late?
Tracy from South Africa.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How can you say, Tom?
All right, so Tina or Tatiana, Peter Hammond. A lot of background noise on one phone. Someone muted or? Oh, that's Michael, probably on the plane.
Yeah, I'm about to leave. Hold on.
Tom and Kathy? Sarah, Joe? Bill and Dale?
We're here.
All right, that's that. All right, so we can get started, I guess. All right, so you're all aware that we are having a face-to-face meeting in Austin, and I want to thank Johan for helping us arrange this. We will travel in probably on March 7th, and to remember that the advisory committee is meeting between 7 and 10. And while there aren't many members of the panel on, we need to know who would like, who may be arriving late, therefore would like better at the meeting, and who doesn't want food. So Jill will take care of that. On the 8th, we're going to be meeting at a room on the university campus, and then later on that night, there's a dinner at the hotel. It's important that you notify Jill if you're not going to be able to attend the dinner. And then Wednesday, we're going to be meeting in the hotel until 3 o'clock, and then the advisory committee will be from 3 to 5, and then people or spend the night there or head home. Just some thoughts about this, the meeting and the presentation. We're working on the agenda. We should have it finished up by the end of today or tomorrow, and we'll send it to you. We're trying to give every project about 30 minutes time, which is about 5 to 10 minutes shorter than the average Nobel laureate lecture in medicine. So I certainly hope that everybody can cover all they've done in the last 4 years. But Jill sent out a template type of idea for your PowerPoint structure, and I would appreciate it if we kind of stick to that. So basically for each of the aims, we need a slide that lists that aim, and then what quote, are deliverables for that aim. Okay, what publications, what funding has come out of it, and then maybe one example of some of the data that support that? Pick the best piece of data that you got about the findings from that AIM. Yet you have kind of 30 minutes to do this. Then we want a slide on how the project interacted with other projects and investigators in CFAS. And then the novelty of your research program that you're considering for the next iteration, and how the AIMS interact with other projects and investigators, and why you need to be part of a consortium. And then lastly, a slide that lists three priority areas in FASD research. And I know I've asked you to do this before, but everybody listed their own area as the most important. So you can't list your own area. You have to list three priority areas, and it can include what you're doing. And send those on to Michael and to Jill and myself, if you don't mind, since we're going to have to discuss these at the meeting. I just want to say that this meeting, I think, is going to be critical, because we're going to have to consider the renewal of CFAS, which we only have basically one more year left on. There is no RFA out yet, so we don't know what NIAAA will be looking for. But we do know that these consortium generally tend to try to do high-impact research with good translation. And this is your opportunity to kind of show the Science Advisory Board and NIAAA staff what you're doing that is innovative, integrative with the rest of the consortium, et cetera. So we're trying to give everybody ample time to do that. If there are problems with that, let us know as soon as possible. But this is an important process as we try to decide on how to move forward. What are the high payoff areas of research that we need to be looking at? Are there new people that we need to bring into the consortium? Should some of the pilot projects convert into regular UO1s? And I think, as we've said, and has been reiterated by NIAAA staff, in many cases, this just can't be more of the same. It has to be something that is going to have an impact on interventions, treatment, diagnosis, understanding FASD in a much clearer way. Any comments or questions on that? Everybody knows all about it? Okay. The other thing, and Johan, maybe you can, if I'm wrong, let me know. I've been in Austin a few times, and I think it's a pretty casual place. So I think everyone can leave their jacket and ties at home.
Yes. And if you have a dog, you know, bring it. That's sort of very casual.
So, you know, we can just, and so we can all just be comfortable, and jeans are acceptable, boots are more than acceptable. So you can wear your Texas outfit, and if you have a hat, you could wear that. So we're good on that. All right, the progress reports, I think everyone turned in. They've been sent out to the people at NIAAA and the Science Advisory Board, and they will be sent to you prior to the meeting as well, to everybody prior to the meeting. So you'll have a copy. It's fairly lengthy. So that's coming up. Then we had noticed that there are several projects that reported publications that are in progress, but they haven't completed the CIFD publications policy for those, which include the concept proposal, manuscript submission form, and the post-acceptance form. So if you could get that up to date, we would appreciate it. Then, like I said, you'll get the agenda and the PDF of the progress reports fairly soon. Certainly the agenda in the next 2 days, 3 days, the progress reports within, by early next week. We'd like to update the website, so if anybody has any news or items that they need on, that please email them to Jennifer so she can put them on there. Any comments? Questions about the meeting? Yeah. Hello, did someone say something? Am I still here?
Yep.
Yep, you are.
Okay. All right, wow. Everybody's just in all agreement.
Yes.
This is fantastic. All right.
It won't last.
No, it'll last. It'll be good. It'll all be good. All right, so like I mentioned, the UO1s are going to have about 30 minutes. Developmental projects, 15 minutes, although there may be some exceptions to that. And the U24s, the cores will get a 15, 20 minutes. Since we're primarily interested in, well, not primarily, but we're interested in hearing about the research going on and how it's going to move forward. We have a meeting of the advisory committee at the last 15 minutes, so I'm going to move in, if there are no questions, to move into Sarah's WebEx. Is that all right with you, Sarah? Jill, did I forget anything?
You're doing great.
Okay.
Hi, it's Elizabeth. I'm sorry I'm late.
Hi, Elizabeth. We just were going over the face-to-face meeting, so it'll all come to you in an email in the next few days.
Okay.
All right. Sarah, you want
to? I'm ready. I just need Jill to allow me to share. Okay. And share. Okay. All right. Can you all see my slide?
Yep.
Just a single slide?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to just update you. You know, we're meeting in 2 weeks, and you're going to hear me talk again. So I tried to focus on just a small part of what we've done. I'm not going to go through all of the aims. These are the four aims of the project. I will update on the tree paper for those of you who have been sitting at the edge of your seat, that yesterday we were asked to revise the manuscript and resubmit it. So I'm taking that as a really good sign. The comments were pretty addressable and made sense. So I think we should be able to turn that around hopefully quickly. The review process was pretty quick too, so I'm hoping that once we submit it, we'll hear something pretty quickly. So I'm very happy about that. So I'm not going to talk about the tree project, although, you know, if there's any burning questions, I'm happy to answer them. I will talk about that at the meeting in 2 weeks. And I'm also not going to talk about the aims where we're looking at age, but I'm going to talk about that at the meeting in 2 weeks. We have addressed our main goal of looking at neurocognitive performance across age in a few different studies. But again, I don't want to be too redundant. So I'm going to focus on our fourth aim, which is the assessment of memory function. We in our previous studies have focused very heavily on executive function, which has been a very important domain, not just in our studies, but in lots of studies. And it's clearly a domain that's affected in children with fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, but we wanted to diverge from that, and we instead focused on memory, and we've done that in a couple different studies, and I'm going to talk about them. So the two studies that I'm going to focus on today look at a profile of memory performance based on the neuropsychological testing that has been done in CFAS-3. In this study and in most of our neurocog studies, we're also incorporating the overarching aim of addressing age. Because of the design of our study, we have children who were tested between 5 and 7 years of age and 10 and 16 years of age, so we have that as a built-in design feature, and so that aim sort of, you know, weaves through all of the neuropsychological studies. And then the second study is one where we're started to look at neural correlates of memory performance. Obviously, this is in conjunction with Elizabeth, and the data that have been collected using MRI in CFAS-3. And so I'm going to tell you about both of these studies. So the first study was looking at memory profile. We collected data from 430 subjects who were either 5 to 7 or 10 to 16. And we have three subject groups. And this is different from our, a little bit different from previous phases, where in this phase we have an alcohol-exposed group. We have a regular, traditional, typically developing control group. We call that TCON for typically developing control. And then we have a control group of children who were recruited because their parents expressed behavioral concerns, or they have some clinical condition like ADHD. We call them the BCON for behavioral control group. And we include this group in our studies because we feel like they are the best comparison for a child with prenatal alcohol exposure who presents because their parents have concerns about behavior problems. We tested memory in this study using subtests from a test called the NEPSI. We have another study that's ongoing that's actually in a similar stage where we used a different measure from the CVLT, but I'm not really going to talk about that, although it comes up in the imaging study. And we looked again at the effects of group and age. We presented this study at the INS meeting that just passed in, that was in Boston at the beginning of this month. Okay, so these are the neuropsychological variables. Don't feel like you have to read the whole thing. I'm just going to go over the domains of memory, or memory, it's immediate memory in this case that we looked at. We looked at memory for designs, which is sort of a visual spatial memory, narrative memory, which is a verbal memory task, memory for faces, which is memory for faces, and memory for names. Pretty self-explanatory. They all have a similar design. All of these tests are co-normed, which is really important within the neuropsychological literature, meaning that you should expect children to perform at the same level on these tests. So controls, you would expect, they're standardized with a mean of 10 and a standard deviation of 3, so you would expect that on average you would get a score of 10. These are the demographics for the three groups. Really impressive sample sizes. We have 148 alcohol-exposed children, 110 in our BCON group, and 172 in our TCON group. And then you can see here that these are the breakdowns by age. So, again, we have a child group and an adolescent group. Okay. And anyone can stop me with any questions as we're going along. Okay, so in terms of the results, you know, we completely expected to have main effects of group because we typically do show that there are deficits in children who have prenatal alcohol exposure. We also had main effects of age. But more importantly, we had some interactions group by age by subtest and then age by subtest. We did not have a group by age interaction. In general, there are lots of results, and so I'm not going to go into all the details of them, but in general, we found that our typically developing controls performed better than our two behavioral groups. Okay, so our alcohol exposed group and our BCON groups didn't differ on most measures. Now, this is different than what we expected. We expected that we would see specific differences between our alcohol exposed and our BCON group because we think our subject population is unique. And you'll see that there are areas where they diverge, but overall, on this test, the behavioral control group and the alcohol exposed subjects are showing the same pattern of performance.
Were there any domain specific effects here?
I'm going to show you that on the next slide. So there were a few things. You mean by group?
Were the group effects different by domain? Yeah.
Yeah, I'll show you that. Okay, so in terms of age, really we only saw age effects in the BCON group. So when we actually showed this in studies that I haven't talked to you about, but I'll tell you about at the meeting in Austin, where we're not seeing big age effects. We're not seeing differences or greater deficits in the younger age group versus the older age group, or or vice versa. I think we expected that we would see greater deficits in older children than in younger children, and across most of our studies, we're not seeing that. So the degree of deficit is consistent regardless of the age at which we look for it.
Does that mean there were no developmental effects in the TCON group either?
Everyone has developed. There's always a main effect of age.
Which is
surprising, actually, John, because the tests are standardized by age.
Okay.
Right? So you actually shouldn't get a mean effect of age because you should have a mean of 10 at 5 to 7 and a mean of 10 at 10 to 16, which is why we need a control group, right? So we need to look at that within our typical group. But in this study, we only saw age effects in the BCON group. And the adolescents performed better than the younger children on three of the four subtests that we looked at. We didn't see those effects in the typical controls or in the alcohol-exposed groups. But I think this is, John, is what you're asking about in terms of the profile of memory performance. Now, okay, lots of arrows. You can kind of ignore them for now. But what I'm showing here is that this is the profile of the memory performance in the alcohol-exposed group. This is the BCON group, and this is the typically developing control group. So as expected, we see the strongest performance in the typical control group, and the worst performance in the alcohol-exposed group. I think there's a few things that I'd like to highlight, because there's different ways you can think about this. You can look for overall main effects of group, but you can also look at domain-specific differences, which is, I think, what John was getting at. Are there domains of function that are more affected in the alcohol-exposed kids than other domains? And so we do see an overall effect of group, but we, in general, the BCON group and the alcohol-exposed group are not significantly different, except on this measure, which is memory for designs, which is our visual-spatial memory measure. So this, we think, is an area. Now, it's just one subtest, and I think we need to investigate it further to see if it is consistent across other measures of the same domain. We have published previously on deficits in visual spatial memory, and so we know it's affected. It's interesting here that it's even affected when you compare it to kids with behavioral concerns. If you look within the alcohol exposed group, we also see that they have actually pretty good functioning in memory for faces and narrative memory. Okay, so their strongest performance is on memory for faces. So I think those are things that we sometimes neglect to talk about, or I'll just take responsibility. I sometimes neglect to talk about where we're seeing relative strengths in this population, and I think it's really important that we point that out. Now, they're not showing the same degree of performance as the other groups, but they're definitely doing better at narrative memory and memory for faces than they are at this visual spatial memory. So that's important. We don't see a flat line of performance in our controls, so that's why we have a control group. We do see that they don't do as well on memory for designs as their other subtests, and we see a relative weakness in our BCON group in memory for names. Okay, so each group has its own unique profile, and that's what was leading to the memory test by group. Does anybody have any additional questions on that?
I just note, you know, your TCON group is right at your norm. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
You said it should be a 10.
Yeah.
So
that's what we would expect. Yeah. It's a mean of 10 and a standard deviation of 3. And also just to remind you that this is combined across age, because we didn't see effects that required us to break it down by age.
Do you have information on alcohol in the BCON group? Prenatal
yes,
alcohol.
We do, because the majority, not just the majority, virtually all the BCONs and TCONs are still residing with their biological families. And we exclude any child with greater than minimal exposure from those groups.
Thank you.
Yeah, we treat them the same. We treat the BCONs and the TCONs the same. Okay, so just to summarize, that study, we reiterated what we've shown in multiple studies before, that there are memory impairments in children with prenatal alcohol exposure. We saw this across domains, but we did see perhaps a specific deficit on visual spatial memory, which is also consistent with previous studies, but this is the first study to show it in relation to a clinical contrast group as opposed to a typically developing control group. We importantly showed some relative strengths within our alcohol exposed group in narrative and facial memory. We didn't see differences in terms of age. So the deficits that we saw in our alcohol exposed group were consistent from the younger age group to the older age group. And that was slightly different than what we saw in our BCON group. So that's my summary of that. So I'm going to move on and talk about the study where we looked at neural correlates of memory in adolescents with prenatal alcohol exposure. This is kind of our first pass and set of analyses at this, looking at this question in relation to which pertains to our AIM-4 in terms of memory. We looked at just one anatomical variable. We looked at surface area, and we looked at one measure from the from CFAS-3, the California Verbal Learning Test, which is a test of memory that we've used before. We submitted this abstract to RSA, so hopefully we'll be presenting it in New Orleans in June. But we have ongoing analyses where we're adding additional brain variables. I'll tell you that at the end, and looking at it in relation to the same neurocog measures. Okay, so because this is MRI, it only includes children in the older age group from 10 to 16. They were collected at all sites and only in the alcohol exposed and typically developing controls. Importantly, we looked at, for this study, we looked at temporal cortical surface area measures from these regions, entorhinal, parahippocampal, fusiform, temporal pole. We incorporated sex and sight into our brain analyses. We looked at these variables from the CVLT, and we incorporated age into our memory variables or analyses. This is just a picture that shows you the regions that we are of interest here. We've got the temporal pole, entorhinal, and parahippocampal gyroses there. Okay, so for this study, again, an impressive sample size of nearly 80 subjects per group. These were collected across the four sites. The groups didn't differ in terms of site distribution or other demographic variables. Although the controls are slightly older than the alcohol exposed group, and that's marginal, you know, the absolute difference is really quite small. As I said, they don't differ on these other important variables. Okay, so we looked at the California Verbal Learning Test, which has measures of both immediate learning and short and long delay memory recall, as well as recognition, which is a forced choice. Did you see this word before? Yes or no? These are the variables that we selected. There's lots of variables on the CVLT. These are the variables that we selected to look at. We selected these based on our previous studies of the CVLT because these are variables that we know are sensitive to prenatal alcohol exposure, and they are different between the groups in this study. These are the surface area variables, and we separate them by left hemisphere and right hemisphere, and you can see that there's a trend for all the variables to be significant in the left hemisphere in terms of surface area, and in the right hemisphere is the same except not in the entorhinal cortex, and the overall analysis is significant. But what we did, because we had multiple brain areas, we selected brain areas that were highly significant. So in the left hemisphere, we used entorhinal cortex and parahippocampal gyrus, and in the right hemisphere, we looked at the parahippocampal gyrus. And And we calculate, or we conducted regression analyses where we incorporated group and brain variable and interaction between group and brain variable and predicted our neurocognitive score. So the question is, does this surface area of this brain variable contribute to the variance in the neurocognitive score? And how does that relate to group? Okay? And so, again, we didn't look at all the brain areas because we didn't want to, we wanted to minimize the number of tests that we actually conducted. So we looked at these are the four that came out with interactions. And you can see the details, I think, you can get lost in the details. But the important thing is that in the alcohol-exposed subjects, which is the blue dots and the blue lines, there's a positive relationship between surface area and performance. So as the surface area increases, performance gets stronger in all of these cases. In the controls, which is the green dots and the green line, the inverse is true, where lower performance is related to, lower performance is related to larger surface area, or smaller surface area is related to larger performance. Although it's negative in all the cases, I mean, you can see these lines are close to zero, right? They're still negative, the relationship is still negative, but it's close to zero. But the pattern, I think, is the same. So, and the important thing is that we're seeing the opposite relationship in the two different groups. Right? So surface area, the relationship between surface area in these brain regions and memory performance is not the same between these two groups. Any questions before I go on? Okay. So what we showed is that the relationship between the measures of surface area and verbal learning and memory is not the same in our alcohol-exposed group as it is in our controls. We see the improved performance is related to increased surface area. I shouldn't really say increased surface area, but larger surface area. And the relationship is opposite in the controls, with improved performance related to smaller surface area. In the alcohol-exposed group, it's likely that smaller surface area and poorer memory performance is related to more severe teratogenesis, right? Children who are more affected may have smaller measures on these two variables. So what we're doing now is we're continuing to analyze these data, but we're going to add, in addition to surface area, we're going to look at volume and also cortical thickness, and we're going to look at some additional brain areas, including some subcortical regions. So that is the what we've been doing. I have, other things that I can talk about, but I thought this was the most, the newest stuff that we've been doing, and I thought was worthy of this time that I've been given. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Anyone have any questions or comments for Sarah?
Comments?
Sarah, what about IQ in all of this?
Ed, we have gone back and forth about how to address IQ. What I think we can do to back up, obviously IQ is an important variable, and it is affected in prenatal alcohol exposure. It's a core feature. Lowered IQ is a core feature of children with prenatal alcohol exposure, and so it's important to take it into consideration. But we have to be really careful about how we do that, because we don't want to remove all of the variants associated with alcohol exposure by taking out or co-varying IQ. But I think there are different ways that we can address IQ in studies like this. In the neural correlate study, I think one of the things that we can do, it's a little bit less problematic, I think, when we're looking at the within-group correlations, to try to partial out IQ, because you're looking at them within group. It's when you're looking at a between-group analysis that taking out IQ becomes so problematic. So to answer, I'm not sure exactly what you were asking, but we that's something that we need to consider in our analyses of these data. There are multiple ways to do it.
That's a complicated problem.
It is very complicated.
Things that like affect surface area, brain surface area. I mean, very low birth weight kids, I believe, have reduced surface areas in certain parts, even into adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
But Well, thank you very much. Any other comments or questions?
Real quick question, Sarah. Have you looked at any of the dysmorphology measures in your analysis?
We haven't looked at dysmorphology in this in these sets of analyses, but it's always something that we consider. I mean, we look at, we have 11% of the subjects have fetal alcohol syndrome in these two studies, so that would be something that we could look at. We haven't looked directly at correlations between dysmorphology and, for example, these surface area measures and the correlations between brain and behavior. Do you have something specific that you think we should look at?
Well,
happy to do it.
Yeah, no. Well, I could get back to you on that.
Okay.
Hand, but yeah, just wondering.
Okay.
I think that's an important issue because the effect sizes were not real large, and even in the MRI studies, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of variability there.
Yeah.
And it would be interesting to know where those 9 or 10 cases of FAS fall on that within those.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, so would you expect that perhaps children with facial dysmorphology would fall, I would expect, among the most, with the more severely affected with the brain and behavior variables. But, I say that, but we have said several times that, we don't see tremendous differences between dysmorphic and non-dysmorphic children with prenatal alcohol exposure. On neurobehavior.
Well, yeah, but Phil does, so it would be interesting to look at. At least Phil says that in some studies he does, in others it's not there, but it would be an interesting question.
Yes.
And one for the
I think there are issues about grouping in that type of study. Yeah, okay.
All righty. Any other issues or questions? All right, we have a few more minutes left, and Helen, you wanted to talk today about the I know it was something. I had it written down.
Yes, I wanted to ask for your help in assessing the visualizations that we created for the external researchers to be able to provide really kind of concise overview of the CFAS phase one data. So in this visualization, the main purpose is to give them kind of general view of this data, and this visualization includes different types of data sets that we will be providing, a number of records per country, number of complete and complete records, and they those can be filtered by race, gender, FAS status, and some other filters. And I just wanted to share with you the link to this visualization, and would like to ask for your suggestions, additions, or maybe questions. Maybe not today because I don't have time for that, but if you can kindly send me a message, I would very much appreciate it.
Okay, maybe you could send an email out of, specifically outline the type of comments that you're looking for and what areas, and send that to Jill, and then Jill can send it out to everybody.
Sure. Thank you very much. Yes, I will do that.
All right. I think that'll make it easier then, and it'll keep people reminded that they need to do it too.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right, are there any other issues or questions? And at AAA, want to say anything to everybody in general before we sign off and just have the SAB and the...
Hi, this is Ken Warren. My only comment is I'm looking forward to seeing everyone in Austin.
Hey. Well, Dale, Bill?
We, too, are looking forward to a very spirited and productive meeting in Austin.
Okay. All right. Well, then I would just like the NIAAA people and the SAB to stay on the line and so we can go over a few things, and then we'll see everybody in what, I guess, right? So thank you very much, and any issues and things, just let us know. All righty.